Hello, I'm Daniel Foy, the co-founder and CEO of Aggregates, and welcome to this second episode in the series of the Livestock Podcast, where in each episode we speak with leaders and industry experts who are interested and invested in farm-level data. Joining me are returning guest Dr. Lillian Fadul, PhD, who is a data scientist at Lactinet in Canada, and Dr. Vivi Thorpe, assistant professor at the Department of Animal and Veterinary Science at Aarhus University, Denmark. The topic for today's discussion is training and educating people to handle data from precision livestock technology. Enjoy. Well, I guess let's start with a short introduction of your use of digital and data technologies within the job that you're doing today. Vivi, do you want to go first?
Sure. Thanks, Daniel. I've worked with data every day, I would say. As an animal scientist, I learned the tools to handle the data, and I encounter students who I try to teach how to handle the data. And I think that's currently my focus on bringing them the right skills to actually know how to make better sense of the sensor data, I would put it shortly.
Yeah. Liliana, do you want to?
Sure. So my background is kindly the same. I'm also an animal scientist, but right now I'm working as a data scientist. And the big idea here, like I guess the objective of my job is just to give added value to the data of the farmers. As Lactinet here in Canada, we have many, many data points from the farmers. So the idea is just to help them or just build decision support tools or just give them benchmarks and what is happening, generating some kinds of alerts so they can make better decisions at the farm level.
So in, I guess, both your experiences with handling data from various systems and places across the farm, you know, what is your experience and background in and good tips in handling that data, but also key digital literacy tools that have helped or digital tools that have helped you grow your digital literacy skills in your careers?
That's a good question. I think you would need, in my opinion, I think it's a little bit of a mixture, because knowing farm data actually requires quite a lot of animal knowledge, because you could put a data scientist to work on animal based data and they could probably give you lots of good insights and information from it, but how to truly interpret it is it does actually require domain expertise, say for instance knowledge of sensors that are capturing how animals are behaving. Well, then you are required to know something about animal behavior to make real sense of the data and not just say, oh, yes, it's clustered in cluster A and B and C. But what does that actually mean, those clusters? I think that domain expertise actually is a strong requirement. And then as a sort of like a second priority, to call it that, is the knowledge of how to actually handle the data more practically, how to extract the right type of data, choose the right methods. And that's where the data science probably component is more required. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think there is kind of the background on the knowledge about the biology of the animal is key for the interpretation and even to see if the data you have is really reliable or not, because that could happen too. But you also need kind of all the knowledge about like the data scientists, like extractions, data cleaning, data transformation, that is not always kind of available, or at least when I was at the university, that's something that I kind of learned kind of by myself. And I think it has changed a little bit lately in the last years. You can see that there are some courses like the different universities, they are giving some basic data science. There were data coding in these different languages to the students in animal science level, which I guess is a good tool at least for starting the process with data.
And you, I think you mentioned a key word there to me. You said outlier. many years ago, when I started my journey in animal science, there was a lot of talk about smoothing data. How do you smooth data? And nowadays, when I talk to students about smoothing data, I'm very careful about discussing this, because you might end up removing the knowledge that you were actually looking for. So in my opinion, removing outliers is something that you do for scientific purpose, but I think it's something that's, you need to go about that with extreme care and consideration, and not just apply some method to remove something because it's noisy. Well, it originates from an animal, so maybe it's actually a true signal. Yeah.
The value chain, right, of the data. So what's its raw to what its potential value is going to be and everything in between. And I think you said it, Liliana, it's somewhat, without you going out and doing it, it's quite compartmentalized right now. And I think each potential user and operator, whether that be at the farm level or an academic, each have potentially their own value chain in how they use and operate that data. And I guess it's trying to ignite the right skills with the right people with digital literacy, so we can kind of move precision livestock farming up that next step, right, across the board. I think about data editing and cleaning, like you just said, and part of the value chain. And I think about welfare, BV, and, you know, who's making the decisions, why are they making those decisions, and how are they then going to impact one or maybe a whole herd? And those are the type of things we've got to kind of get to the bottom to within the value chain. I don't know if you have any ideas or thoughts on that.
I think my immediate thought when you said this was, let's not look at the averages anymore. Let's look at what happens at the extremes. And instead, when you have a whole group of cows or a group of sows or whatever group of animals, yes, the average is meaningful in some sense, or the median or whatever metric, but it's probably more informative, I think, to look at what happens at the extremes if you want to look at welfare of the entire group of animals and of the individuals, because it would be those animals at the extremes that are struggling at the welfare, to keep up a good welfare, I suppose. Yeah.
So it's a public health with a bell distribution curve.
Yeah, you could say so. Yeah. And then I would focus at the flat ends of that bell. That's where I would find my not so fit individuals.
I think about that as well for genetic potential and the data that around it and adding it in. You know, we kind of don't take that extremes into account, almost, into what the genetic potential may or may not be. And that's something, new value in the future by actually having that type of information and access to it. That's pretty exciting.
I guess I will also add, like, even from the management perspective, you know, you want to know what these top cows or herds are doing, or what is happening, that they are like in the top level, like production or whatever you're measuring. And even like look also like to the ones that are very low and see what it's, if you are able to identify the problem and correct it.
That brings up a new, you know, and back to kind of training and skills. And I guess this is wrapped into digital and data literacy too. It's what you do at that point, and trying to get, I guess, the domain experts up to a proficient level to even identify that earlier alert or issue to then go and intervene. And we need them to kind of have the knowledge now of what to do. Now we're getting those two extremes on, you know, the bell curve if we're catching them.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you would have, I'm not sure what the level is. I think each, if you look at the farmer level, I think they would have their own approach and their own learning curve in doing so. I think some people will tune in extremely quickly. Say if you're a farmer who has a huge focus on, udder health, then maybe that's your focus, and you'd look at information that could inform you better of what's the udder health in your herd, and you would very soon learn pointers as to where things are a little bit off. Whereas in different herds that have different issues, they might be picking up on it, completely different set of pointers, and at a different pace. I'm not sure if there's certainly not one size fits all, and everybody does the same in this game. I think it is dependent also the expertise that you already have.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's like, it's the same when you go from the researcher point of view, there is kind of an interest and you're just going to focus on that. But like normally having and comparing different production systems and different learning curves, it's complicated. Also because you're going to have different type of data, they are going to have different interest in and different focus. So yeah, it's, I guess it will be dependent on the different priorities at the farm or interested in the research.
I guess just, you know, the farm's use of the data, this kind of service and supply industry, and then the research community all kind of are using the same data almost in different ways, but it's potentially different based on each individual site, if that's fair to say. And I guess then saying digital literacy levels are completely different in those three sections too, and what's required. And I guess, you know, bring it back to the farm level and let's build it up to the researcher level. You know, some of the simple things we've spoken about before is, you know, just a European computer driver's license, which allows you to be proficient in, you know, Microsoft 365 and, you know, Excel. So you can actually operate at a standard with those tools. I think we need to move there first before we even introduce some of these other more complex digital tools, because I'm sure we all know we've walked onto farm sites with Windows 98 and above and various software packages. And we've got to kind of eliminate that issue and know, like so many other professional work environments, that that's just a standard anyway, and why that's a standard, and then build up to the AWSs and whoever else we're going to have in terms of technology from there. And then I think it's bespoke then for maybe the service industry and supplier based on how deep they want to go and what services they want to supply. But the academics then have to have this completely other potential avenue within the same access of data, but are using it in the ways I'm sure you're both aware of in Python and R, but also then thinking about it in commercial applications, not just in these potential research environments, because we could probably talk about this all day. We have in separate conversations the, you know, the scale of some of the research projects that we're doing, the populations that we're testing digital tools on are still quite small. So we need actually the community involved, farmers involved with us trying to develop digital tools going forward, because we need their populations to work with and to aid them. It's a cyclical thing. So I don't know if you want to jump in and add anything to what I've mentioned there in terms of the different levels of literacy, but I'd love to get your thoughts on it.
Well, I have just something that came up, pop up in my mind is, like, as you mentioned, it is a cycle. And even when you are like in the, let's say, in the extension part that you want to use all these tools or whatever you are developing, even if it's like the, with like these R or Python or models or whatever, you still need to go back to the farmers and make sure that they understand and they kind of like the validation that is going to be useful for them. Because you can, at the research level or at the extension level or at the industry level, you can develop the better tool you want to have. But if it gets too complex or is something that the farmers really don't need, or it is going to take forever to them to learn how to use it, it's not something that's going to be adopted. So again, it's kind of a cycle without end. So I guess like even the different levels of data literacy between the different circles, I think we always, or at least the way I see it, maybe that's really my personal view, is like even if we are like developing and whatever, we always need to think and go back to the farmer, because we want them to use whatever we are developing, and we always kind of want to have and make their life easier and help them make better decisions. But if they are not going to use whatever we are developing, we are not doing anything at the end.
Yeah, no, you know, coming on to preparing undergraduates and maybe the service supply or service industry, because they're going to have potentially the biggest impact, whether they're going home to farms or they're going to go work in a company. And, you know, there's an OECD report for 2019-2021 that we've had a 13% or a 3% decrease over the last 2 years of service industry suppliers,
which are critical for reducing greenhouse gases. So I think actually getting appropriate training to the right levels of the next work, a level of workforce, is pretty critical to targeting what's going to happen at the farm level. And as you said, it's cyclical. So what kind of, you know, not to say what it is, but what do we need students to be prepared for and thinking about if they're coming into maybe animal science, or maybe they've got a computer science degree and they're going to come into animal science and they're going to start working in this space? You know, what are your thoughts around that?
Well, in the last year, I have seen, or at least when I was back in the US, that there's a lot of people doing the two majors. So they are doing computer scientists and they are doing animal science at the same time. So I think those ones, they are going to have really all the abilities, like they're going to be the ideal people you want to have, like to hire, you know? And I think that's a pretty interesting mix of knowledge, as we mentioned at the beginning of. So I think that will be a key one. And the other one, I think it will be also interesting because you see, even there is a lot of people that they arrive to the master degree or to the PhD that they don't even know how to manage Excel, mm-hmm. which Excel is not going to be is not the perfect tool, but I guess it's kind of a standard one that if you go back to the farm or to the farmer, normally they have Excel.
It's pivot tables and a million rows or columns and, you know, have a play around. But there's obviously the next step above that. And I think there's more tools that obviously the PhD student needs to be aware of outside of Excel now, which, you know, will include Power BI into the future. I'm sure Tableau and AWS, I think it's QuickSights, have their version of it. And being able to go from pivot tables to that technology, that's, I think, a given now that has to be there, especially if you're not going to stay in academia and actually going to go work for a commercial company. I think that's a top thing on your CV potentially. So in terms of the undergraduates, you know, I'll go back to my days, it was SPSS and that dreaded platform. What kind of undergrad to master tools, master student tools do we need to talk about and kind of make people aware of?
I wouldn't want to try and scare people away. I would rather want them to learn, let's say, learn them to think in the right ways and not say you need to learn a lot about statistics and programming, blah, blah, and you can name a lot of names for different platforms. I would rather want them to say after this, you'll have skills that will enable you to, first of all, handle your data, visualize data, and draw some interpretations based on that alone. And then if you go to a slightly more advanced level, some modeling would be involved as well, where you manipulate and model something from that descriptive level. And if you've gotten to that stage, I think you've already gained, I don't know how many percentage of what it is we want people to know, but you're getting pretty close to having an understanding of how data was generated, how you can manipulate it and visualize, and then do your own modeling from there on. Because then you will have gone, actually, I think, through the circle. And then you can come full circle if you wanted to, then visualize your own modeling output to the end user, who could be a farmer or somebody else who would need to go to the farm and look at the data, the vet or whoever, to understand what's today's key points of interest at this farm.
So it's not skills, tools so much, it's more the general course and what that ultimately guides and gets the undergrad or master student to think about and come out with beyond just physical skills, you're saying?
Yeah, I think so. I'd be reluctant to mention any programming language over another, because you could actually easy go from one to another without breaking a leg. It does take some transition and learning a new syntax or something, but it's more like understanding how to do it and not so much learning where do the commas go in, or how do I write, how do I pipe data from here to there. You'll easily catch that it's more the, yeah, the way of thinking.
And I think that's also important, what Vivi just mentioned, because at the end, when you are gonna work, like, you know, when you are out of your studies and everything, there is gonna be also like computer scientists or people that are really expert in doing that. So it will be just on how like a teamwork. So like, I have an idea, I understand the biology, but like, I don't know how to code, like to run the perfect code and the functions and everything, but you are. So it's like we just can split the work or work together and develop and do nice things.
Yeah, I think it's actually learning to speak the same language, to say. And by that, I don't mean English. It's more understanding that when I say a term, a scientific term, this person on the other side of the table will understand. And if they say some statistical term, so we can all speak the same language and will understand without having to know deep inside how to do it and perform it, because we can't be experts in everything, all of us. So I think it's more this bridge building exercise where you have knowledge of all these areas.
Which ironically is kind of how technology operates anyway. You know, it's kind of these blurred lines of teams formed on specific tasks in an agile approach, you know, trying to build up to a certain milestone and then, you know, assessing where they are. And you need to have all these different skills and people. And I think one of those is really an animal science component. And, you know, our previous work together, Vivi, I think that went quite well together, was the animal science with the computer science kind of informing until we kind of had a more unified front in that skill set, because that was still, you know, 5 years ago was kind of still in its infancy, it felt like back then, with some of the data tools that are currently available on the market. So to talk about, you know, what are, not to, because I probably sound negative in the fact that there's jobs, but there's lots of jobs here and there's a whole future career force to be developed, I guess. You know, what are, I guess, some of the challenges that we are up against that need kind of what you're saying, students able to come out and problem solve on, to give some examples? I know you both are working in those areas, so I might think it might be good to hear from you guys.
Examples of problems to solve?
Yeah.
I was at a conference last month, and a lot of the presentations were about integrating data to learn new things about individuals or herds. I think that in itself is not a hot topic anymore because we've been integrating data for many years now. So I think maybe it's more now turning towards this area of applying some new methodology to data that we've already explored in some ways, but maybe we feel there's more to learn if we look at it differently with new methodologies, maybe, or that mixture of extra skills that we have with, machine learning has been a buzzword for some years now, artificial intelligence, what have you. But having said those words, I'm still sort of thinking, well, the classical statistics and modeling still has a role to play because we can interpret the output from those models much more easily. And maybe we can infer just as much from those as we can from machine learning. Plus, the new methods also require huge amounts of data, and maybe not all farms yet can offer that amount of data, or maybe not all institutions have that data available yet. I know we're talking about data literacy, but still, I think many institutions are actually not yet at the stage where they've built the platform that they have all this data collected that we want to, that or that we feel we need to have the best information about the individual animals. Or
I'm not gonna jump in. I was gonna let you, Liliana.
Because you mentioned data integration, and we have been doing that for a while, but we have not yet have something that it's functional. You know, like, for example, that we are talking right now about the greenhouse gases emission is, again, like a big topic around the world, that the governments are like kind of as a mandate that you need to reduce by X amount by, I don't know, 2013 or 2030 or something like that. But the thing is, like, for that type of analysis, we need a lot of data. And all at some point, we have the data, but is everything spread all around? Like, they are each part like the, I don't know, I'm just going to say, I'm going to put example, the all like the inventory of the animals is in company A. All the production of the animals is in company B. So, and they don't make that interchange. So that makes the work pretty, pretty complex. And even if we go down the road, like to sensors and everything, or even not to sensors, like to different programs. So I have my diet is in this farm is in software A, and the other farm is in software B, and there are feed softwares, they are completely different inputs. So when you're going to put them together, it's like, oh no, it's not the same calculations, or it's not. So that makes everything really, really hard. Even if we have the best intent, it's like not possible to have all the data available whenever you want it. And I think like the greenhouse gases is like a nice example of that, that we, even if we have been working on data integration and we have been hearing that like long time ago, it's like we are not even able like to have feed efficiency, which is with, you don't need any machine learning or any
intelligence. Simple things.
It's a simple calculation, but like the farmer is not able to have his feed efficiency daily,
yeah,
because it's different softwares. Maybe some farmers, they have it because they do it manually, or I don't know, but it's something that we, you know.
No, it's very interesting because the standards component, basically the return on ROI is important to farmers. And with these digital technologies, we have to prove it. And that's the position I'm ultimately in, is proving that there's an ROI, but also handling disparate data sources, trying to show that there's an ROI, which is really difficult to show. And, you know, I would have said there's between 20-25% data editing on average from 6 to 7 systems that you're working with. But I was speaking to somebody in Europe last week who's an academic, and they were saying 80% is what I'm working with in terms of data quality or missing and error data. And that's a big effect on what we can ultimately do, even if they're the simple things. They don't have to be complex machine learning or AI. I think about validation even before we have integration. I'll come on to integration in a second. Validation of the data independent from who's supplying the equipment is going to become a really important component, because if we're going to use some data points towards standards, we have to hold accountability. And that might be the farm, but it also might be the tech supplier. And those are areas we're going to have to further explore. In terms of integration, I get tired of hearing integration. I'm using inverted commas, because that's a data science term for merging columns of information that can be used collectively. We're nowhere near that in terms of the data sets. They're still disparate, probably only sending data, a specific yes or no with a timestamp data points to specific locations. I think about data consolidation, you know, how do we actually take all these disparate forms and bring them in and actually handle them before we even merge them in conventional integration for use? And then you have a third layer of integration that I often feel is forgotten, is application integration, is how maybe one or two service suppliers of agri-tech can communicate amongst each other, but that would be separate from the data flow itself. That might be something like servicing or an issue coming out from the system that they have to act on as part of their contract. But we're trying to put so many terms into this one word, integration, that really needs more definition going forward. And I think that's part of the standards. That was just my thoughts on what you were saying a second ago.
Yeah, I think you're right. The part about the quality of the data in itself, and that sort of it ties back to also what we discussed earlier about outliers. It would be nice to actually have this data validation, or whatever you wish to call it, a quality assurance that when this data enters a certain point from where you can catch it and then merge it, you would already at that stage have had some quality check that the where this data was produced, it wasn't an erroneous piece of technology, or it wasn't a manual human assessment that was by a factor just missed a comma someplace, or things like, yeah, things that you would think are quite basic, but in many places they don't take place. So you have to sit there and make this quality check before you start merging everything and making real sense of it. On top of that, extremely time consuming. I think many people do not realize that this is actually what we in academia spend most of our time doing. before we get to what we think is really interesting, so that, which is the modeling part of it. But making sure that it's quality data is a huge effort. So
yeah, I will say that it's going to take like 90% of your time for all the data, like the data analysis. Like 90% of your time is just validating and doing data cleaning, and then the real analysis is just going to be pretty fast.
Yeah.
That's this average 2.5-year publishing time for data or research. You know, that's part of, I think, precision livestock farming going forward is actually challenging the timeline at which we're able to get something out there. And this is part of this cycle with the farm and having a relationship with the community to be able to do fast-paced research so we can kind of clean out maybe not 90% of what you have to do in the future, but maybe about 75% of it that needs to be done before it even gets into an academic or researcher's hand, and then actually allow them to work even faster, do more projects even quicker, and get to the, you know, the really challenging questions we have to answer, some of the insights into them. You know, that's how I visualize the problem too, you know.
That's a dream scenario.
Yeah.
Skipping past,
the scale of it, you know, to speak of the scale of it too, I do often call this going to the moon mission, you know, in terms of what we have to do, because this is from the ground up, not the top down in how we have to solve the problem, but we have to kind of intersect at the education level and then start hopefully they'll start percolating out into the farm level. But, you know, as we often talk about collectively, this is more of a 10-year type of approach than a next year type of approach in what we're talking about. You know, VBI, we've had some discussions around dream scenarios of a course, and I know you have probably some ideas around what that looks like. We've touched on that at the very start, but what do you think the future of kind of a robust animal science computer data course look like? That just starts us off. You don't have to give us the future, but at least gets us going. Because I do have, people are going to listen to this. They have an interest in their academic departments about what the future of that is. So, you know, we've discussed it and I'd like to hear your thoughts again on it.
I think at the very basic undergraduate level, it's learning some statistical thinking and learning data handling, I think, is probably the most encompassing term I can think of, because it goes back to understanding where the data comes from, entering it into some program, programming language, and then being able to manipulate it and visualize according to which question you're asking. I think those are the very basic things that I could think of. And then you could build on that depending on what that graduate wants to look like at the end of the program.
Liliana, I'll pose the same question, but I'll give you the slant of what do we need to do in terms of the farm level and maybe in the industry. You know, you talked about all the different repositories there and your experience. You know, what's some of the things we could be doing in that sector?
That's a good question. And I don't think if I have the answer for that, but I will say that I think it's important to continue create awareness to the farmer about the data that they have, like the data have a lot of potential, that the way how can they use them. I think that's really, really important. So they kind of understand, and they also can to start maybe demand a little bit more from the companies. It's like, oh, I want to see this, but I can't, you know, things like that, but sometimes they just can't. So that would be one. And the other one, and I guess that one is kind of more political and more complicated, is like, there is always like at the industry level, they're always kind of interested, different interesting. So each one want to do their own thing. And when you see it like as a whole, like an industry, like a dairy industry in this case, or no matter what other industry as a whole, is like, there is no benefit like for the farmer, which is kind of the end user about. Because if he has different softwares, or this group has this one and this group has this one, but if you want to kind of like, you know, if we are talking about feed, it's like, doesn't matter what it is, but you want to have like their data just to do like a machine learning algorithm or just a basic calculation. But if you cannot access the data, it's impossible, you know? So I think that's kind of a big dream, and I don't think that's going to be an easy to have. But at least if we can manage to have some, I don't know, neutral partners that can, even whenever the farmer accept to share their data, we can, like the research or even the industry level or whatever they need to share, that would be kind of the ideal situation.
Yeah, and maybe, and that's probably also, we're getting into the world of utopia probably, and no longer exactly. Dream world here, talking about the
we're allowed to dream a little bit.
yeah. And what I want to say with that is not just how data is created, but also talk about a simple thing like energy corrected milk. You could think you have you want energy corrected milk for some purpose in a company, but if you collect it from various other companies, it might still be in the same unit, but maybe the calculation behind it is different. It's still energy corrected milk, but the formulas behind the different calculations vary depending on which one you chose. And that in itself creates some offset, if you like, in the data. So you can't just compare. It's not just apples and apples across farms. It's becoming green apples in one farm and red apples in another farm, because you're still comparing apples, but they're not quite the same. So having some kind of see-through representation where you are actually allowed to see. I know this is sometimes tapping into the secrecies of companies that have come up with their own models for some sort of detection. But if it's knowledge which is out there in the open, like energy corrected milk, there's a string of different formulas. If you could at least say which formula was used for this application and which formula was used for another application, then you, when you aggregate the data across those different platforms, then you would at least know how to account for those different calculations. It's one way of approaching this data quality and data, I don't know, similarity, or I'm not quite sure what to call it here, but it's to do with understanding how the data was created and how it was manipulated until it arrived where you can actually
the metadata of the data that's coming in, right? So
yes,
it's went through, it's had X treatment, or it's gone through X thing, it's had X output, and that should all travel with the data point that it's going to go to. I think about exactly you're saying, standards, black box, bottlenecks, right? I think of those three things in what you've just mentioned. But I also think about, you know, we've mentioned the interdisciplinary skills and tools from animal science to computer science. But I think that next level of where the tools need to go to also is not just those components, but also the business models. You know, when you look at what other companies in other sectors are now doing around how their revenue and how they operate as a business, they're very blurred lined. And I think we're still trying to sit in our silos and work amongst ourselves to facilitate the needs of the farm. And I think this model, second generation of business models that has yet to appear, is going to be what will allow us, enable us to do potentially more going forward. But I don't see that currently with this generation of tools that are in the field pivoting to that quickly. Do you want me to give you an example, Vivi?
Yes. Yeah, please do.
So instead of, you know, let's say if farmers have access and ownership of the data, you can apply the insight down to the data versus we sell kind of a data system with an insight today, which is not agile and it's not flexible. We have to update the hardware to update the software and the application or program that's there. Some are moving in a bit of an agile approach, but it's still general across all their farms in their clouds. So if we actually had it site-specific, you could have that interchangeability of insights to the farm, its needs, but actually it be a new model where they're not supplying any actual hardware, but it's a software product or an insights product that's now generating revenue for a company. That's ultimately a new model, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it does. For sure, it is sort of like maybe it is. I think many companies are struggling to show that there's actually a return on investment with their particular product, but probably there's also this reluctance to share the true sensor output, and maybe in many cases they don't even store it themselves. You could say maybe the output is simply a digest
stored for 70 days. I have one sensor company that only stores data for 70 days, and then it's gone from their repositories.
exactly. And you could, and of course, the amounts of data generated poses maybe another problem, because where do you, I mean, You can store it, but that also comes as a price. And how much of it will actually give you the return on investment? I mean, how much do you need to store? Or could you reduce the amounts you store and still have? I'm thinking about, I mean, we talk about sensors that generate maybe 10 data points per second, and there are some sensors that generate one data point per day. Yeah. And in between those, there's a lot of different versions of what you store and how much. I think there's an exercise there needed as well to figure out what's the amount needed to make biological sense of it. And when does it become overkill? Mm-hmm. So finding that nice balance of making a good return on investment and then having the exact amount that you need and not too much, so that you can still actually financially also keep it for a while if you want to do some post-hoc analysis.
On varying style farms, that would be a very interesting project to do something like that.
Mm. Yeah, it sort of like becomes a data amount sensitivity analysis, you could say, because there's been this mantra for many years that, well, at least among researchers, that if you ask them how much data do you want, as much as possible would have been the answer. But I think for the moment we might start to see, okay, maybe we could do with a little less than we could actually ask for, because we end up with this storage issue. And then
a security issue. That have well. A storage yes. issue.
Yes. Yes, yes. Yeah.
And a running issue, you know, if you want to work with the data, all the data management, you need like a server or something, because if not, it's like in your computer, it's not going to run.
Yeah, but I'm sure there are hugely skilled data scientists that could crack that nut with some light additions of what you could model and spark up the data that you actually need for running some type of simulation or modeling. But I still would like to see somebody point towards a direction saying this amount of data is needed if we want this type of information, and we don't need more, and we can't do with less.
I think that's part of this model change, Vivi, because right now we're selling, or people are getting sold estrus detection or lameness detection, but actually what you're saying is, what is the valuable, economically viable volume of data that's going to get us answering some of our questions, our most pertinent questions, right? I think that's a very interesting way to look at the way we have to potentially move forward with precision livestock tools at the farm level. So I know we're coming to the end of our time. You know, I suppose we should do a summary and a rundown of what we've discussed and leave with some words of wisdom our listeners. But yeah, I'll let you guys pick up what you think, you know, should be some of the major things we leave our listeners go away with around digital and data literacy, and your final comments.
No, I think maybe I would like to ask, if I'm allowed to ask Liliana questions.
100%.
Yeah. If you were to open new positions, what would the profile be of a person that you would hire? What would your wish candidate look like? Then I could maybe react to that as an academic.
So, like in the industry, you mean? Mm-hmm. Like opening a. That's a very tricky question, because I guess the ideal candidate will be the one that I mentioned, and they are doing kind of like for data scientists, they will be like doing both majors, like the animal scientist and the computer science. I think that's the ideal person you want to hire, like to handle data from animals and do all the work. But that's not really common. Having people with animal science background that work with data scientists is not very common. Maybe it's going to get common in the next, I don't know, 5 years or so. But I think for me, that would be kind of the perfect candidate for like a data scientist job in the animal science industry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, of course we couldn't. I'm with an animal science institution, so we couldn't educate data scientists, but we're still educating candidates in that area, and I think we need to be smarter and maybe slip in some more data science skills without actually hardcore teaching them those skills like you would in a data science faculty or institution.
Yeah, and that awareness, like you said, for the farmers, I think it's part of that introduction to students. It's maybe just deep awareness, and then it's maybe them going off and doing it themselves in their own time initially, but still coming back in with their questions and get put in the direction they need to keep going in, if that's so the way they want to go.
Yeah, definitely.
Sorry, Liliana, I interrupted
you. No, I was just going to mention that maybe having, you know, like this optional or mandatory, I don't know what would be the best, like course that kind of give you like the overall vision and the overall, because it's a lot of information, you know, like hard coding and everything. That's like another story, but at least that, well, you can, as Vivi mentioned, like the overall or understand also the importance to know a little bit more. You're not going to be a data science expert because that's not your background, and that's okay because there are other people that they know that. But at least that you learn the basics, or at least you kind of get the idea that it's important for you to go and learn a little bit more about it. Because yeah, of course it's going to give you like the overall, and at the end you're going to have an idea, but you're not going to do everything in one semester. You're not going to learn everything you need to learn, but at least it gets you kind of curious and about like, oh, maybe I should take another course, or maybe I should go to YouTube, or maybe I don't know, you know, or just take 6 months and go into it, or maybe no, this is not for me, you know, I just keep with the biological part of it and that's it.
I agree. I think it an education should give you or at least in this area should give you knowledge of where you're missing. Where's your missing knowledge and where's your interest, and then you can always dig deeper or go with what you have, because your common ground or your starting point from as a candidate is still strong enough that you can go out and make sense of the data in a company or to farmers, helping them interpret what they see in their farm.
Okay, well, have you any other ending remarks before we head?
Yeah, I guess I just have there's like a bonus. There is like this webpage, I think, if I'm not wrong, it's all over the world, but maybe I will need to double check that it's called Data Carpentry. And it gives you, you know, workshops about coding, like basic ones in R, in Python, you know, Julia, all these different languages, and that they have available like from all the different levels. I know that with they had like agreements with different universities. So if you're part of a university, you're going to pay like $3, $5 for the different workshops. So maybe that would be also an interesting thing for that, if you're learning and if you want to push a little bit forward, see if that is available in your university.
And there's lots of other ones like Udemy and Microsoft Learn, and I'm sure AWS has their own learning environment, and all are, you know, very good starting off tools. And I think that's where most people end up cutting their teeth before they go on and do something more novel. One question I last had before we go, and I got asked this last week when I was speaking, who do we watch for the standards and data regulations we should be following? I didn't really have an answer. I said, EAP with the Animal Welfare and Animal Health Commission, you know, they'll have some interesting things in the future, and somewhere like the Dairy Welfare Council. But you know, I suppose ICAR is another one, but are there others that we should be watching or seeing as the emerging kind of authority in the space?
Only for like standards, like data standardization?
I guess, you know, that's the important part of what we've got to use, you know, what is the raw data, or, you know, some of the algorithms that we're running through this raw data through, I guess, then.
It's very specific, like, you know.
But it's important because, you know, trying to get this ROI for farmers. I also don't, as aggregates, don't want to be the person defining that going forward. I want to work to what's being defined to me, but I'm finding it very hard to, in certain data points and new novel technology, it's really hard to have a guidance on those.
Yeah, I'm not really sure something like that exists yet, but I'm pretty sure it's something people would, or most people would welcome and discuss. But then you also, discussing this, you also realize that some of it is, you quickly get into these IP rights of companies when you talk about models. I'm not sure you would ever get to the stage where you have this completely see-through net of connected data sources. It would be ideal if we could get to that stage.
Yeah, I guess the question will be like, just following up what just Vivi said, is like how you can use like the outputs of those protected IP models or sensors or whatever, how you can use those outputs in a way that they are practical for the farmer, and that you know that the output of those models or sensors, they are like, you can trust them and you can work with them, even if you don't know how they came to the last number of it, you know? Because I think like all the standardization, and when we talk about sensor, I think that's very complex, if it's not impossible, you know, because each one has their own way of calculating their stuff. So at the end, what we have, we're going to have like the product. So how we can use that product in the real life, you know, like farmers are using it one way or another in the farm. So I guess how we can use that in a more, I don't know, spread way or industry way, that we can, even if they have different sensors, but they are measuring the same thing, we can use that output to something interesting.
I think we're opening up another whole door conversation here, but it's something that's part of that editing component, accountability component we talked about, and who has the ownership as well of the data. You know, I think that's, we said in the first episode, maybe we should come back and talk about that. And I think we're hitting on it again, just at the end of this one, that it needs its own episode. Well, if you know, I'll end it here. But it's been really great to have you both participate in this discussion. It's obviously a bigger topic. But you know, if I'll put your emails and your information, your LinkedIn information to the post. And if anyone has any questions, I'm sure they can reach out to you guys and ask you any additional questions from this episode.
Sure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Livestack podcast. You can find more information about this episode's topic on the Aggregates website or by following Liliana, Vivi, or myself on LinkedIn. If you would like to hear more about this specific topic or have a question, please reach out to us using the contact section of the Aggregates website, or you can email us at info@aggregates.io. Thank you for listening.